On the latest Planet Money, a special report inside the business of asylum. We go inside an underground network of professional story writers, coaches, and scammers gaming the asylum system, and how the FBI cracked down. That's on the latest Planet Money. Metapedia.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino, I'm Felix Contreras. If there was ever a holy grail of vintage Cuban music, the new collection called The Classic Cuban Jam Sessions would be inside. This five-volume set captures a side of Cuban music that was mostly out of the public eye, the after-hours jam sessions. But between 1956 and 1964, some of these sessions were recorded by the folks at PanArt Records. And the new albums contain recordings by Afro-Cuban icons like Cachao and Jose Fajardo, among many others. There is also a fascinating story about how these recordings were made, discovered, digitized, and finally released. And here to tell us all about that is Judy Cantor Navas, the co-producer of the album and a well-known Cuban music expert. Judy, welcome to Alt Latino.
Thank you, Felix. I'm thrilled to be here.
This is all very exciting. The album is chock full of unbelievable treasures. And what we're going to do this week is play some of the tracks, talk about that history. We have a lot of ground to cover, something like 70 years in a short amount of time. Okay, Judy, what are we hearing behind us? What are we starting with?
This is Porfiria, and many people will recognize that as a real classic of Latin music. And it's been recorded many times by Nat King Cole, among many other people, composed by the Mexican composer Alberto Dominguez. But this is, like other things we're going to hear today, the version that was recorded at the PanArt Jam Session. And it's, you know, they're like other tracks that we're going to hear. This was just a freestyle version where they would take songs that they would play in the 50s in Havana, these very talented musicians, and they would just, you know, riff on it. So it's really wonderful, as we're going to get into talking a little bit more about the jam session. But, you know, you really can feel in this, you hear yelling, you hear kind of catcalls between the musicians, and so you really get an idea of how it felt to be there that night at this historic jam session.
All right, let's check it out. This is Perfidia. Thank you. Perfidia from the album The Complete Cuban Jam Sessions. This one is credited to Julio Gutierrez. And Judy, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, now give us a time frame of when these five volumes were released.
I guess what I want to start with is take you to the 1950s, to the mid-1950s. And I like to call these jam sessions like the flip side of the Mambo era, or the flip side of the golden age of Cuban music that many people are familiar with. You know, you're thinking of the bands and they're wearing like their frilly sleeves, and the big bands are playing every night in all of these clubs, from the Tropicana, the Sans Souci, and all of the others that are quite well known that you think of when you think of 50s Havana. But then what was happening was, after they would play at the clubs, they were getting together to have jam sessions. So, you know, sometimes they just couldn't wait to get off the stage of their regular jobs to get together and just play. And that was happening at people's homes, like at Chico Ferrer's house, for example, or many other musicians' homes. Or it was happening even at the Tropicana on Sundays, they would have a regular jam session. So I think what's so important about these recordings is they really reflect another side of music in Havana in that well-known musical era that a lot of people don't know about.
Okay, now music from Volume 1 featuring a jam session under the direction of pianist Julio Gutierrez. Okay, all of you Cuban music geeks, get a load of the musicians on this track. Pedro Justiz, who was also known as Pedro Chin, also on piano, El Negro Vivar on trumpet, Chombo Silva, the great Chombo Silva on tenor saxophone, Marcelina Valdez on the tumbadora, or the conga, and the great Walfredo de los Reyes on the drum set, each a legend in their own right. This is amazing music. Thank you. think it's also important, too, to point out during that time era what's happening here in the United States in terms of Cuban music, but also in terms of jazz, because there is such an interplay between the two. 56 to 64 would put us like post small group bebop, actually right in the middle of it. Also during that time, there was also a lot of Cuban recordings going on in the United States, Cuban musicians recording with jazz musicians. And again, it's like, it's that, what I call the really superb golden era of the interplay. It's like there was no, you could hardly tell the difference between what was going on here in the United States and going on in Cuba at the same time.
Right, it was all about kind of the ida y vuelta, the back and forth between Havana and principally New York. And with a lot of musicians going down there, a lot of Cuban musicians, you know, going up to the States. And in writing the liner notes for this box set, I'm very grateful to Walfredo de los Reyes Sr., who actually participated in the jam sessions. He's on three of these albums. And if you don't know him, he is a great drummer and percussionist, and he really was one of the pioneers of the what we think of today of the Latin drum set, you know, where you're doing drums, you're doing timbales, you've probably got a couple congas next to you. And when he started doing that in Havana, it was really revolutionary. He and some of his colleagues started experimenting. And then you had Guillermo Barreto, who has been called the first Cuban bebop drummer, who is also on these recordings, you know. And so there are some musicians who maybe are not as well known with the general public, but at that time they were really pioneering a lot of what was happening in Havana as far as this relationship that you're talking about between Cuban music and jazz.
I can't overemphasize how exciting this is to hear these recordings for people who just really have completely absorbed and have studied this music. This is almost like discovering the missing link in a way, because the recordings were so hard to find, and under the auspices of really fine record collectors for the original recordings, to have these be reissued, remastered, and reissued in such clarity and in such detail. With guys like you said, like Walfredo de los Reyes, Guillermo Barreto, all of these musicians who are just so legendary, it really is like the lost ark in a way, you know?
Yeah, I mean, these have become, yeah, these legendary albums that you can read about, you know, on the internet. Yeah, and people who are real collectors or kind of Cuban music geeks. Like me,
and me.
They talk about these albums, and as I said, I want to mention Walfredo again, because he actually was one of two musicians who I found who are luckily still with us, who could tell me about these recordings, because there is not a lot of information available. And I do want to add Walfredo, who now lives in California. He talked to me about his memories of the night of this first jam session in the Pan Art Studio.
Thank you.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, and this week on Latino USA, I talked to rapper and actor Fat Joe about the Bronx, hip-hop history, his 23-year-long marriage, and his latest acting role in the film Night School. That's this week on Latino USA. Find us on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Judy, you mentioned the name Wilfredo de los Reyes Sr., because there is a junior who is also a musician and a drummer. But the senior, the dad, in your liner notes, you talk about how he told you his remembrances of this night, of this recording that's featured on this album. Talk to us a little bit about this.
Julio Gutierrez, who was also pianist and band leader, and Wilfredo de los Reyes played in his band at the Hotel Nacional. And they, you know, they did have this idea to record a jam session and really reflect what was happening in Havana among the musicians. And not just, you know, the all of the commercial music that was coming out of there. So there is a bit of a discrepancy on whose idea it was. But in any case, Ramon Sabat, who owned Pan Art Records and the Pan Art Studio in Old Havana, he said, okay, we're going to do this jam session. So Julio Gutierrez and the pianist Peruchin, Pedro Justiz, led this jam session. And what they said is, starting at 10:30, you know, anybody who wants to come can come in and play. And they got a lot of bottles of rum. Wilfredo told me some Spanish cognac that they was very kind of a preferred drink at the time there. So they got, you know, all the alcohol together and the open bar, and they just said, come on in. And so people started coming, and they played all night. So they opened the doors at about 10:30, and by the time they left there, it was at least 6 a.m. And this resulted in the first two volumes of Pan Art's Cuban Jam Sessions.
This track is called Listen to the Rhythm of Cha-Cha-Cha from Volume 2 of the Complete Cuban Jam Sessions from Kraft Recordings. Judy, I wish you could see the smile on my face right now, because this stuff is just so, so amazing.
Yeah, and what I love about it, you know, in addition to the music, is just the feeling, right? That you can hear everybody. I just love it. You know, laugh. You know, you can just kind of see their smiles on their faces as they're playing, I think.
Thank you. One of the things that strikes me about this thing is, you know, I'm a freak for music history, for jazz history, for Cuban music history, and I'm reminded of what happened in the like early 1940s, mid-1940s, at a place called Minton's Playhouse in New York, in Harlem, where these musicians, these young musicians, Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, they sort of woodshedded and sort of created bebop, a style that completely revolutionized jazz. And these recordings of these Cuban jam sessions are, it's like as if there was a tape recorder in Minton's. You know, it's like this, it's the equivalent, the Afro-Cuban equivalent of listening to these musicians create what eventually became Latin jazz, or just completely expanded the vocabulary of Cuban music and Cuban musical expression, except there was a tape recorder rolling at the time in these sessions, right?
Yes, totally. And I think, you know, what they wanted to do, I mean, their music was very Cuban, but was also very influenced by jazz. And, you know, these were really sophisticated cats who had such a broad, really a musical education just by listening. I mean, another thing is that people like the drummer Guillermo Barreto, and they would just get together and to listen. You know, somebody would bring a new stack of records from the United States, and they would just listen, and they were able to play, you know, what they heard. And they really studied it too. They studied American music. But on the other hand, they wanted their music to continue to be very Cuban. And it's great because on these recordings, you know, you hear everything from, you know, you hear the son, the acoustic son, and the more big band son. You hear Afro-Cuban rumba, mambo, cha-cha-cha, more of the kind of the country acoustic, almost guajira music, but it's being transformed. And yes, you know, eventually this led to what we all know as Latin jazz. And these guys were some of the pioneers of that, and some of the most important pioneers in Havana who are on these five albums.
It really is a fantastic opportunity to hear this music finally, and especially with such clarity. Let's talk a little bit about the story of the Pan Art Studio itself, because that is an interesting backstory, as well as the man who started it. But let's talk specifically about the Pan Art Studio and how it came to be and what was happening there.
The Pan Art Studio was opened and actually built by the head of Pan Art Records in 1943. So Pan Art Records began at a time when RCA Victor really had cornered the market as far as Cuban music was concerned. And Pan Art was kind of, you know, the little indie upstart that set out to be, you know, a Cuban independent label that was going to bring Cuban music to the world. And that's essentially what happened. In the beginning, Sabat had a lot of problems competing with RCA Victor. But eventually he was able to get his Pan Art albums into stores, which was difficult. He was able to sign a lot of the artists and the composers because he offered them at one point a rate that was more attractive than what RCA Victor was offering. And the studio in Old Havana today is the Agrem Studio, which I think more and more people are familiar with. It's called Ereito, but it's the Agrem Studio where the majority of Cuban music was recorded until the 1990s, when other studios started popping up in Havana. And it is the same studio where the Buena Vista Social Club was recorded. And it's interesting because when, you know, you listen to these albums and you listen to the Buena Vista Social Club, I mean, they're both examples of what beautiful sound there is in this studio, which, you know, some people have called it the cathedral of Cuban music. So by the 1950s, you know, Pan Art had become a name that was very well known. They had affiliates around the world, like especially in Latin America. They had, you know, a great distribution network. They also worked with Capitol Records. So they had kind of a back and forth, like a deal with them where, you know, the Capitol would help them get their records out there. And then, for example, Nat King Cole in Español, it was Ramon Sabat who encouraged Nat King Cole to record his first Spanish language album. So really, by the time they did these jam sessions, the Pan Art Studio had, as you say, become like a ground zero. It had really become a center of music in Havana.
Now, this is where the story gets interesting in terms of the tape archive and what happens to the Sabat family once they leave Cuba. But before we get into that, let's hear one more track. Let's hear the track you selected called Guaguanco Comparsa.
This is on the third volume of the jam sessions, and that was headed by El Nino Rivera, who was a great composer, tres player, and, you know, and this one is guaguanco comparsa. So you're taking, like, the guaguanco conga rhythm and the idea of the carnival comparsa, but you're mixing that with jazz.
Amazing. Amazing. Check it out. The track Guaguanco Comparsa, which obviously is a nice long jam session. You're gonna, again, you can hear the complete track on our website at npr.org/altlatino. We're talking to Judy Cantor Navas, who is the co-producer of the album, along with Mason Williams for Kraft Recordings. Now, talk to us now a little bit about the history of what happens to Ramon Sabat, the owner of Pan Art, and what happens to his archive, his tape archive, after the Cuban government nationalized the studio in 61.
Well, what happened actually a little before that was, there was a new political climate in Cuba. And so it was actually Julia Sabat, who was Ramon's wife, who also worked at the label. And, you know, she felt that it was going to be possible that the label would soon be nationalized, meaning that they would take it over, the government would take it over. So they started, when they went on business trips outside to Mexico, to New York, they started to take copies of the master tape of everything that had been recorded on Pan Art out of the country with them. And so what happened was that when the Sabat family left Havana for good, they already had these tapes outside of the country. And they, of course, they also still exist in Havana, and they were, you know, they passed into the AGREM archive. So in this case, you have kind of two sets of a lot of the same recordings. In the 1980s, Julia Sabat sold her Pan Art archives to a company in Venezuela. Then they passed to a company in Mexico, MuseArt. And what happened was that Kraft Recordings, which is Concord Music's archival label, bought MuseArt, and along with MuseArt came the PanArt catalog. That is why now, finally, after so many years, we are able to see these kind of reissues. So we have the reissue of the five Cuban Jam Session albums, and I'm also currently working with Kraft Recordings on a box set that's going to kind of tell the whole story of PanArt through its recordings. So I'm very excited about that too.
And so are we. This is amazing music. Let's just play a little bit of disc four, which I think for a lot of people will be the crown jewel of this recording, because this is the remastered recording of the Cachao Sessions, correct?
Yes. So this is the album, like when you say the Cuban Jam Session, this is the one that most people are going to be familiar with. And this is by Israel Lopez, Cachao, the great bassist. It was inducted into both the Latin Grammy Hall of Fame and the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry. And I just want to say I'd like to see that happen with the rest of these albums,
right?
Because they are so important. And on this, you know, if later many people know about Cachao, he had kind of this great comeback at the end of his life. So when you listen to this, you're going to hear the familiar rhythm of the song that became Como Mi Ritmo No Hay Dos. But this is when Cachao first recorded it.
Box set is called The Complete Cuban Jam Sessions, digitally remastered from Kraft Recordings, an amazing collection of historic music. Our guest this week was Judy Cantor Navas, who along with Mason Williams produced the album. Judy, again, thanks for visiting Alt Latino.
Thank you so much.
Our thanks to NPR member station WPPB on Long Island for their help this week. And also, there'll be a Spotify playlist of some of the tracks from the five-volume set on our website at npr.org/altlatino. And let us know what you think about this music. Reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. I'm a very excited Felix Contreras. This has been Alt Latino. Thank you for listening.